Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, December 10th, 2016. This is episode 1347. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Audible. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about tech. Tech, yes. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, that kind of stuff. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Well, why don't you just use Skype or something, and you can call me, and that way it'll be toll-free for you. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's see. What's in the news? Michigan, the state of Michigan, where all the automakers are. Detroit is, right? First state in the union to pass comprehensive self-driving. I don't know if self-driving is the right word for that. Autonomous driving regulations. But because they're in Michigan, the regulations, which this is great, I'm happy, but the regulations do require you to be an automaker to do it, which means not Google, not Apple, not Uber. You have to be an automaker or partnered with an automaker. So I think there's going to be ways around this. The self-driving coalition, didn't know there was such a thing, who represents Google, Uber, Volvo, Ford, and Lyft, Ford in there, wrote the coalition was pleased that the state of Michigan was taking steps to move innovation forward and warned against creating a patchwork of state regulations. In other words, they'd like a federal law. But it is now legal to have a self-driving car in Michigan and to do ride sharing and have truck platoons. Self-driving. Yeah, we got that. The auto, you know, that delivered beer the other day. Self-driving truck. No driver required. No driver required. You could sit in the back seat. They're allowed to test and use public roads. It is legal to test. So Michigan being very forward-thinking in all this. The next closest is Florida, which hasn't legalized completely autonomous driving or ride-sharing, but does allow testing and truck platoons. California just has testing. Nevada just has testing. Tennessee testing and use on public roads. In the other states, I guess it's got to be private roads. Same with Washington, D.C. Arizona testing on private roads. So we're getting there. Self-driving cars. You know, it's all or nothing, I think. If you have some self-driving cars and then some humans, it just doesn't work. Humans have different expectations. In fact, we've seen the Google self-driving car be confused by humans. I do not understand your intentions. It got in a little fender bender. The self-driving car came to a point where there was road construction and had to merge into the lane to the left. And I guess, you know, this is all programming. It's all software. I guess the software said, usually whoever's coming on the left will let you merge. You do your turn signal and then you kind of go. Problem is, there needed some rules. Unless it's a bus. If it's a bus, you don't go. And the problem is, you know, as a human, think about what you do in a situation like that. You look over your shoulder and you try to catch the eye or at least notice if the driver that's coming up on you notices you and it kind of is going to slow down. You kind of pay attention to what's going on. But the self-driving vehicle isn't really looking at the driver and it can't understand intention, not yet. So what it doesn't understand is that buses have a different kind of rule of the road. They know now, Actually, the Google engineers were funny. They said, oh, this is great. This is a good thing. It was just a little fender. Maybe they were with a slow speed crash. This is a good thing. Now we can update our algorithms. Yeah. So do you still have a Note 7? 133,000 people in the U.S. have not handed in their Galaxy Note 7s. What? You know what you haven't heard lately, like in quite a while, is of any of them exploding, right? Or burning. Which tells me that the ones that are still out there probably aren't going to, right? Are they going to? I mean, like, but Google's, I mean, Samsung says, no. We can't leave them out there. We want every one of them. So there will be one more update. December 19th, in 9 days, Samsung is going to push an update to all the Note 7s that will make them inoperable unless they're plugged in. Which is, of course, the most dangerous thing you can do with the Note 7 is plug it in. But okay, inoperable. They've got 93% of the Note 7 sold in the U.S. They've got them back. But they want those remaining 100,000 or so. And by the way, I have a friend whose mom and dad loved their Note 7 so much, they wouldn't turn them in. And Stacy told me that they finally turned them in because it was impossible to use it, because every time they tried to make a phone call or use it in any way, a little thing would pop up saying, you know, you really should turn this in. This is dangerous. Don't keep using this phone. They finally just gave up. They loved it. I loved it too. It was a great phone. I turned mine in pretty quick. I didn't waste a lot of time. Samsung says, together with our carrier partners, we'll be notifying consumers through multiple touch points to encourage any remaining Galaxy Note 7 owners to participate in the program and take advantage of the financial incentives available. I think they give you $25 if you turn it in. And your money back, obviously. They give your money back plus $25. And often offer a phone and swap. But there's just some people, they're just holding on. So Verizon, I love this. Verizon says, nah, we're not going to do that. What? Verizon said, we are not going to. Here's the problem in general in smartphones. The carrier is in charge of what you get. Verizon says, we're not going to push that update. Because, this is the quote. We will not push a software upgrade that will upgrade. You call that an upgrade? That's not an upgrade. We will not push a software upgrade that will eliminate the ability for the Note 7 to work as a mobile device in the heart of the holiday travel season. You know it's illegal to bring it on a plane, right? You can't get on a plane without them telling you. You don't have one of them Samsung thingies. And often they don't say Galaxy Note 7. They say, you know, anybody with a Samsung phony wony, you got one of them, pass it forward. That will eliminate the ability for the Note 7 to work as a mobile device in the heart of the holiday travel season. We do not want to make it impossible to contact family, first responders, or medical professionals in an emergency situation. Oh, I get it. They don't want the liability. Now I understand. Not our fault. Is it your fault, Verizon, if the phone blows up? Well, Verizon and Samsung have communicated the need for customers of the Note 7 to immediately stop using their devices. Oh, Samsung's now giving you $100. Wow, they really upped the ante. Are you holding out for two? Is that it? Are you waiting for $200 to turn it in? Come on. Don't be a silly. It must be annoying you, and it will certainly be unusable soon. But unless you're on Verizon. AT&T customers, you'll be notified soon of credit for illegal charges. You know what cramming is? That's when a third party sneaks a charge into your phone bill. The cramming charges that the FTC went after AT&T for and has now forced them to do an $88 million refund to 2.5 million AT&T customers. Average refund, about $31. Charges $10 a month for ringtones and text message subscriptions containing love tips, horoscopes, and fun facts. AT&T, according to the FTC, tolerated the unauthorized and illegal charges, placing them on your phone bill despite being aware of the problem and making it difficult to get refunds. Nice. So look for a little something in your holiday stocking from AT&T. All right, phone calls coming up next. 8888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Look who's here, sitting in the beautiful booth.
What's that?
You have a bigger booth than I do, Kim Schaffer.
Well, it's your whole studio.
Yeah. They put me in a little room. They give you the whole...
No, I'm just
teasing.
Big.
I like my studio. Best radio studio ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because there's no program... don't tell them. There's no program director.
Not in-house.
Not in-house, yeah.
But and do you get hotlined?
No, because they don't... Do you remember that in my early days in radio?
Yep.
There was always a phone. I suppose there still is.
There is.
The studio. The hotline. If that rings,
you're in trouble.
That means the PD, the program director, the guy in charge of you, is mad. How dare you? You got it. And if it happens in the middle of the night, you're really in trouble.
It means you fell asleep on the record.
I did that. You know, I had my first job in radio was overnight, Saturday night, Sunday morning. It was my very first job right out of college, and they let me do like an hour of DJing, and then I had to roll tapes of religious services because it was Sunday morning. And so it was like an hour religious service on a tape. So I'd lie down on the studio floor for a minute just to close my eyes, just to rest my eyes.
Yeah.
I remember waking up, and I heard the tape going... Because it got to the end. I don't know how long it had been. But you know what the most depressing part of that whole story is? I looked up the phones. I expected people call. Nothing.
Nobody cared.
Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody cared.
Well, things
Nobody
were automated.
Listening.
Things were automated by the time
I
got
I'm an
into
old
this
man.
Business.
Yeah.
And I would, early Sunday mornings, rack up a whole 6 hours worth of programming
and
go back to sleep.
Yeah, take a nap. Put a little cot in the studio.
No, there was a couch in the studio.
That's such a
perfect.
Mistake. Never put a couch in the studio. Big mistake.
Yeah.
Actually, I mentioned this because this week is the 40th anniversary of my beginning of my radio career.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have somewhere, I have a picture of, don't have it anymore, my FCC third ticket, my third class license, which in those days...
You had to get. Yeah.
So you could take meter readings.
I don't have those, and I still did meter readings.
Meter readings.
We had to take meter readings.
Element 9 of Title 4 of seven Section 664 of the FCC. It was third class Element 9. That's what I had. You have one too? Well, thank goodness. I hope you're taking the meter readings, John.
No, Michael's doing that back at the studio.
Michael. Do you have to take meter readings, Michael? No.
Oh, that's automated too.
We don't have a transmitter. It goes up to a satellite. It goes to a satellite now. We don't have a transmitter, but all of our stations do.
Yeah.
Thank you, stations. And to every engineer listening who's sitting there waiting to take the meter readings, thank you. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Every 3 hours.
Broadcast endorsement. That's right. Yep. So I'll put that up on my blog so you can see what it looks like. I don't think it's illegal to do that.
The license?
Yeah. It looks like something from President Lincoln's sign.
Well, it's long since expired,
It looks like you might see that at the Smithsonian under glass to keep the oxygen away so it doesn't crumble. It's that old, which means I'm even older. What can I... we got to take some calls. You've been answering the phones all this time. All these people are on hold going, all right, Leo, who
cares? About the radio.
Enough about you.
Yeah. Ramona wants help with an internet service provider, wants to know what kind she should get.
I'm here to assist. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Ramona.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So, Leo, I was looking at moving from my current home into another part of town, and I found out that my internet service provider doesn't provide service in that area of town, or they could only give me 3 Mbps.
Ah, you have a phone company or a phone service, DSL.
Well, no, I have... It's DSL Extreme, True Stream.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, yeah, but it comes through the phone lines. It comes through the copper. So DSL Extreme, who's a fine sponsor of our and on our LA station, they take advantage of a great rule the FCC made some years ago that said, look, phone company, you've got copper going to people's homes. You have to let other internet service providers ride on that copper, put a switch in the central office. The problem with that, though, is it's just two, you know, it's what we call a twisted pair. It's two copper lines, and they can't carry a lot of data. And the farther you get, the lower the amount of data is. So what DSL Extreme is telling you is you're so far from the central office that we can only give you this, we can only guarantee this much speed.
So, yeah. So then I went to Gen 4, which is satellite internet service providers, and they could have provided me 10 Mbps. What are the advantages?
I dislike satellite because the equipment's expensive up front, and the service is somewhat limited by the fact that you're sending your signal up to a satellite and back down to it, to the internet, and then back to the satellite and back down. And all that travel time adds to something we call latency. So, for instance, Skype would be terrible because you have, you know, it's like if you ever watch CNN and they're making a satellite call to Beirut, you know, and the person's 3 seconds later said, it's like that. And for gaming, it's terrible. Now there is one satellite provider that is, I think, a little better than the others. It's a Wild Blue, Exceed. Oh, okay. I would look at Exceed, but it's the same problem. It's expensive, and also they have limited bandwidth because it has to be on a bird. So they often have what we call fair use rules that you can't use too much.
Oh, that's something about. Use it more in the dead of night, you know, daytime. I know there were a lot of limitations, but I was thinking, well, 10 Mbps with them versus 3 Mbps.
It is better. It is better. And Exceed is quite good. EXEDE.com. If you have to go satellite, I only recommend satellite for people who have no other good choice. So DSL is out because DSL Extreme is riding on the same wire as any other DSL provider would be.
Right. They said nobody can give you service out there. So
because you're in a more rural area. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know what? It's not. It's Temple City, which is a great, huge city in L.A., and I'm like, I don't understand why there's no...
Well, it's the distance. It's the distance to the phone company's central office or to some building taking its place. So it really is just, you know, I think in time you will have better speed. How about fiber? Is there fiber out there? Has anybody done that? Or cable?
I didn't even ask.
Is there cable out there? Do you have cable?
I think there's cable. Would cable be better than
much?
Satellite?
Yep.
Really?
Cheaper and faster.
Time Warner, please spare me.
Now it's not even Time Warner anymore. It's Spectrum. They bought them.
Oh, Spectrum. Yeah, that's even worse. Yeah.
Like, well, if of the three, look, the lesser of three evils, I would say go with cable. But look at Exceed. It's the best that satellite can be. But in general, cable's the best of those three choices. Because if you can get copper, a big fat copper pipe in your house, that's always the best way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time once again for a visit to home theater land. Scott Wilkinson is here. He is our home theater geek, does the podcast Home Theater Geeks on my podcast network. It's not a conflict of interest if I do it.
That's right.
Twit.tv/HTG. And you can listen weekly. In fact, you had a big... Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
You had a big scoop this week.
I did on AVS Forum. Actually, it wasn't me. It was, believe it or not, it was a guy who writes for one of our other properties, motorcycle.com or something like that, who was looking... He occasionally looks around the trademark filings, interestingly enough.
Oh, clever man.
Yeah, and he found a trademark filing with the European Union Intellectual Property Office from Lucasfilm, which seems to indicate the title of the next Star Wars movie, the one that's about to open next week called Rogue One, is not part of the, you know, the ongoing story of Luke Skywalker and so on and so forth. It's sort of a separate story set in the same universe. But the next episode of the saga, episode 8, is expected to come out in like a year from now.
They're going
to
do it Christmas every year, right?
I guess.
Yeah, the plan.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So this guy was, his name is Dennis Chung, and he was looking around the trademark office there, and he found this trademark filing for the name Star Wars.
Yes.
Forces of Destiny. There it is. And we, you know, we wonder why that might be the name of the next movie. And the reason we think so is there's a long list of goods and services that were listed in this movie,
trademark thing,
plus motion picture films.
So they spent, Disney spent for Star Wars, the franchise, they spent $4
billion. $4 billion, yeah.
Ticket revenue on the first movie alone, The Force Awakens, $2 billion.
So they made half their investment
away. It was like the deal of the century.
Yeah, no kidding.
Unbelievable.
And how much do you think Rogue One will make?
I mean, oh, no. They've got every year, they've got $1 billion just boom, ching, ching.
Yep.
forever and ever and ever.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Exactly right.
Good
exactly
business.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, serious business. Anyway, you heard it here first.
By the way, the chat room had some thoughts.
Yeah.
Star Wars 8, The Search for More Money.
Well, yeah, that's truth in advertising there. Sign, sure.
That was Fritz. Stein Dave said Star Wars 8, Revenge of the Twinkies. That could also... all right. Home theater. You know, I got a question for you.
Oh, sure.
I bought a new AV receiver. Mm-hmm. Actually, it wasn't new. It's a couple of years old now. Mm-hmm. And I had my TV hooked up to it, my plasma, because I had, you know, still holding on to my Panasonic Viera, the last of the great plasmas.
The last of the great plasmas, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it wouldn't work. I had some problems with copy protection. HDCP and stuff and then it just said I can't see the HDMI port. So I thought, so I happen to have another receiver lying around, an old Onkyo, so I put that in and that worked. But then a couple of days ago, same thing, HDMI doesn't work anymore. And
then I
tried connecting the TiVo directly to the TV. That worked. So it wasn't the TV, wasn't the cable, wasn't the TV, it was the receiver.
You went through the troubleshooting steps beautifully.
So I bought a third receiver.
Uh-oh.
My wife said, honey, maybe you should figure out what's going on before you put another one in there. But you know me. So I want to watch TV for one thing. So I thought, you know what? It's possible the TV is shorting out, you know, something shorting out the receiver. But I bet you it's not the TV. It's one of these doohickeys. So I only hooked up the TiVo and the Roku. And we'll see if that fries it. I think is it possible that an HDMI device could fry the HDMI?
I don't see how. It's all very low power, circuitry and.
But it's happened to two different ones.
Well, yeah. Now, were they both Onkyos?
No, one was Denon and one was Onkyo.
One was Denon and one was Onkyo. Okay.
Now I'm back to Denon. I got, you know, fortunately I found a low end Denon. Mm-hmm. 4K receiver, AV receiver. So,
yeah, which was probably not that expensive.
No, well, it was $275.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Well, that, you know, that's not.
Could a bad cable do it? No, I mean,
no, I don't think so. And especially, well, now that's one thing you might try. I mean, part of the troubleshooting process.
Oh, I did swap all the cables. Of course.
Yeah, swap the cables
first thing
out.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you know what you're doing. Boy, that's a good question.
By the way, non-trivial.
Yeah, no, that's non-trivial.
Okay, so I have a cabinet, and I have a lot of things in the cabinet and a lot of things going in its wires,
oh my gosh.
And then every once in a while, the cats go back there. So I don't even want to go back there anymore. But, but I had to, and you have to unwire everything. Oy, this time I brought the label. I went in. I had a headlamp.
Yep,
and I brought the label maker with me.
Yep, so you label all the cables. That's really important.
I think I have black lung disease now, but other than that,
when I first put my theater in, I installed an equipment rack that rotates, so that I could actually rotate it around and get at the cables very easily.
Because you're swapping in equipment all the time.
I'm swapping stuff in and out all the time. Exactly. So that was an important thing for me. You're not. And so that makes it more difficult to do this troubleshooting process.
Can I get a rotating equipment rack in the living room? No? Oh.
Well, I don't know. I would have said at first, well, Onkyo has had a history of trouble with their HDMI boards. The circuit board inside the receiver that does HDMI. But if you had the same problem with Denon, okay, now we're looking at maybe something else.
I think something's shortening out. There's a little power, isn't there, over the HDMI?
A little bit, yeah. Not much,
though. Not much. But, you know, you can short out. In fact, we had a story on one of our shows this week, Security Now, how easy it is to short out USB. You can make a little dongle just with a battery, and just you could plug it into a USB port and break it like that. Mm. Boom.
Well, then there may be something.
I wonder.
Some little tiny short of, and it's low power, but then, you know, the circuitry is all low power, so it wouldn't take much to fry it, I guess.
All right. Well, I shouldn't take up all your
That's
time.
Okay.
I just, you know how it is. I have a friend in the AV business, so I'm going to ask him. well, we'll see. I'll let you know if this third receiver goes. If it does, then I don't know what I'm going to do.
No, let me know. It'll be interesting information, research information at least.
Yeah.
So Mike Bees wrote me and said that he loves plasmas. Speaking of plasmas, you know, and he's got two Pioneers, the old Kuro plasma, which was the best there could be, and he's looking for another one. And he says, should I buy a used plasma? The good Panasonics and Pioneers on the used market are very rare and very expensive.
Yeah.
Because they don't make plasmas anymore. Oh. And is there anything with a comparable picture quality? Well, I have to say, not exactly. I think OLED is as good. It has different pluses and minuses compared to plasma, but OLED is kind of the way to go these days, unless you can happen to run across a Pioneer Kuro or a Panasonic ZT60 or VT60, which were the sort of top of the line.
Nobody makes plasma anymore. Nobody.
Nobody.
Wow.
No.
Does anybody make CRT TVs?
No. I don't think. Not that I think that's been gone.
I mean, they make vinyl records. You'd think there'd be some kind of hipster market for look at that TV. That is a 27-inch Sony Vega.
Yeah, but,
the
I
best
mean,
there was.
What hipster would want to lift that 300?
I know. Scott, he's also editor-in-chief of the AVS Forums, avsforums.com, and joins us every week at twit.tv/HTG. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson.
You betcha.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. We have the Kuro here, my old Kuro. I brought it in.
Oh, you do? You have it there at the studio?
Yeah, for football games, although it hasn't seen much use lately because the Niners are so bad. And then I kept the Panasonic Viera. That's our living room TV.
Yeah, one you have in the TV, in the living room.
Yeah.
It's a large one, too. Isn't that 65?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's same as your OLED now.
Might be 70. Might be. It's the biggest one, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but they wear out, right?
Well, yeah, they do. But they, you know, they've got a lifespan of 20,000 hours.
Oh.
Or more.
That's
so
more than me.
Yeah. So it's basically, you know, it's not practically not going to wear out until a very long time, unless you watch it all the time and it's on all the time. Then sure.
Alibaba has some interesting TVs.
Yeah.
CRTs. Here's the Uganda.
What?
It's called the Uganda. Let's see what these are all 14s, 14 to 21 inches.
Okay.
29. Here you go. Here you go. No. These are CRTs.
Oh, CRTs. Oh, wow.
Brand new 29-inch ultra slim CRT TV. An amaze by Soho Industry Limited.
Wow.
Yeah.
So somebody still makes CRTs. That's
sure.
amazing.
Sure. They can give you, look, $30 to $43 for a 29-inch TV, and they can give you as many as $9,000 a month. if you had
who's going to sell $9,000 a month
of
those?
Well, maybe there's a market, and, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I thought they were completely dead.
Who knew?
I wonder, can you look up a plasma, see if anybody still makes a plasma?
I wouldn't be surprised. Let's see. Plasma. Brand new plasma TV. This is Alibaba. What a great site for crap. look at that.
I thought that was wholesale, too.
Well, that one was wholesale. I don't think anybody wants a knife. Whoa.
Whoa, you all right?
Yeah, this is my water. All over the place. That's all right, because there's nothing electronic in this area.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I don't see these are all. I don't see any plasmas. These are all LEDs.
So now, Rusty Bones in the chat room says,
"Here's a plasma here."
Oh yeah,
it's just water. Here comes the studio staff.
That won't help. That won't hurt.
Here, why don't you take over while I?
While you clean up
the
there.
Usual.
All right. Well, Rusty Bones, I was about to say, saying in the chat room, plasma technology is not dead. Rumors of its return are being whispered. I have not heard those whispers. It'll be interesting if you, Rusty Bones, if you have any links to any place where those rumors are, let me know. One of the problems is that plasma, it's much more difficult to make a 4K plasma than it is to make a 4K LCD. And so I think one of the reasons that all the TV manufacturers stopped making plasma was that they knew they were going to 4K or UHD. And they knew that they weren't going to be able to do that with plasma. So I think that was one of the reasons that they stopped. Let's see. Tom Bar 3 says, casting video to my Vizio P65 no longer sends audio to my Sony receiver via the HDMI connection like it used to. Have you heard of an issue like that? No, I haven't. It sounds to me like what you're doing is you're doing something called HDMI audio return channel, or ARC. And if that's no longer, if that used to work and now doesn't, that's a interesting question. It could either be in the TV or it could be in the receiver.
Give you an old receiver if you want to try it. Hey, Scott,
yeah, really.
You going to be here for the top of the hour?
Happy to, yeah.
Thank you, sir. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Mike's on the line, our next caller from Maine. Hi, Mike in Maine.
It's your main man, Leo. Back with you again.
It's my maniac. Welcome.
Hey, I'm calling to follow up. You may recall a couple of weeks ago I called because my iPhone stopped texting me in the car.
Yes. Did you ever figure that out?
Yes, I finally got a message from Subaru the other day, from the genius at Subaru that helps people all the electronics.
Yes.
I just checked with a service writer, and we were working with Subaru, and Subaru now recognizes that the texting isn't working. All right.
Well, that was their fault then, or no?
Absolutely. No, definitely their fault.
Okay, good.
It said, as of right now, nothing's settled. I'm kind of reading you from the text, but the advice is to make sure that you have any, and when you come in to get your car serviced, make sure that they check the software in the car and upgrade it, because Subaru is having trouble with both iPhones and Android, and they know that it's not working.
Oh.
I wanted to call and follow up, because there were a lot of listeners that had concern.
Yes.
And it's a Subaru issue. Something happened. We don't know what. We don't know why it stopped working. But Subaru knows that there's an issue going on and is working on it. Thank God. At least somebody knows there's a
problem. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Well, thank you. I'm glad you continued on with that one. I'm glad you found the solution.
And if things work out more, I will let you know and keep you informed.
Please, Mike.
Keep up a great show.
Thank you, sir.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah, 40 years. You were a radio guy. You know, that means 40 years in padded rooms with no windows. You ought to get a reward of some kind for that. Michael in Newcastle, PA. Hello, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo. Hey, listen. I'm on Windows 7, okay? It's a Dell, if I'm saying the word right, Inspiron 531.
Yep.
Okay. Listen. My girlfriend gets on the thing, and everything's fine for a while. And then this window comes up and says, warning, outdated drivers.
Oh.
Now, is that something that I should be concerned about, or is it a scam?
Depends where it's coming from. And this is part of the difficulty, isn't it, of being a Windows user? It's completely possible for a bad guy to make a pop-up that's indistinguishable from a Microsoft
announcement. I see.
So where does it, the real, you know, well, we're all having to learn. The internet is now just rife with scams and scammers.
Yes, yes.
We're all having to learn how to kind of wend our way through this. Yes. So the first thing is, consider the motive. So is it sending you to a website?
Oh, Leo, I was afraid you was going to ask me. See, I'm not the tech person here.
Okay.
She is.
I'll tell you what to do. Here's what you do.
Okay.
So it may or may not be. If you wanted to try to figure out if it was, it doesn't matter if it is or it isn't, because I'll tell you what you do instead. But okay. If you wanted to figure out, if it's malicious, it will send you to a website or ask you to install something. It will ask you for an action that will allow the bad guy to take the next step.
Oh, okay.
So the solution that is always the same, never click a link in a message, in a pop-up, in a window, anywhere. Don't click those links, because that's what the bad guy's trying to get you to do, and then you follow that thread down. So, but maybe this is real. So what you do is you go to Windows Update.
All right.
And Windows Update will update your drivers. If it's a true Windows message, then it'll update your drivers. Look, drivers are often in the optional section of Windows Update. So look in the optional. It won't be in the critical updates. My guess is it's a bogus.
Because Leo, she said when that come up, she said somebody wanted her to use her credit card.
Yeah,
to get things straightened up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
All right.
So that's
right.
Always the question to ask. Who benefits? Or as they say in legalese, qui bono? Whose benefit is this to? And if it's not to you, then don't do it.
Yes, right.
So in general, you want to be very careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to not follow those links. There's certainly not. She was smart to say, wait a minute. He wants money? No, I don't think so.
Yeah. And here's another question, Leo. See, this computer was a Windows XP. Well, she had someone, she wanted Windows 7.
Good.
Well, she had someone bring a Windows 7 disk here, but it wasn't genuine.
Of course
Windows
not.
7.
So she's getting other.
Does that have something to do with it, maybe?
Well, she's not getting the warning. This isn't genuine.
Yeah. Well, when she boots up down here on the right corner.
Yeah.
That's what says this Windows isn't genuine 7.
Right. So eventually, she's not going to be able to use it at all. You get Microsoft slows the machine down bit by bit.
Yes, now, and believe me, it's very slow.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
That's why. Yes. So you can call Microsoft and say, "Oh man, you don't have to admit culpability. Just say I got a computer guy put Windows 7 on here, and now it says it's not genuine. And you can actually pay them, and it won't be very expensive for Windows 7.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Yeah, that may be related. Those pop-ups, so clearly now we know, because it asked for a credit card. That's a bad guy. The question is how the bad guy got on your system. Is it just a website? No harm, no foul. Websites pop up stuff like that all the time. If you disconnect from the internet and it's still doing it, that's not a good thing. Then that means something is on your system already. But you'll know. You'll see more stuff like that. And if there's stuff like that on your system, then this would be a good time to, instead of buying Windows 7, go out and buy Windows 10. Put that on there. Might as well get the new version. Mark Riverside, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm not doing that great. Well, I have a Motorola Moto G, and I'm using it in my Uber business, and it was working fine until I installed the Marshmallow OS update.
Yeah. What
now
happened?
I'm having problems with my GPS. Like when I select like Waze and I go to start, it's like it says searching for network. So I have to go over and I have to shut off. Like I swipe the icon down, shut the app off, and turn it back on, and then go back up, and it detects it. And I'm also getting a problem with my SIM card. I keep getting the message: the SIM card is disconnected. Shut off or else continue.
You know, I wonder if you have a hardware issue that might be just kind of coincidental with the update. And by the way, Marshmallow, I mean, it's good to have Marshmallow on there if you can, because it fixes a lot of. And the Moto G is a great phone. You've had it a couple of years, though, now.
Yeah.
Sometimes it maybe just. So I would see. Here's what I would try. The full factory reset? You know how to do that? You go into the settings, backup, and reset, and you erase everything, go back to factory condition, and restore everything. Sometimes when you do it, have you done that yet?
I haven't done it with this phone. I was thinking about it, but I haven't done it yet.
That's always the first thing to try in case, you know, when you did the operating system upgrade, something got messed up. Let's hope it's that and not a hardware issue. But the good news is that phone, you've had it for a couple of years. Those G's, they still make them. They're great phones. You get the latest version, a couple $100. They're not expensive, but I would first try restoring it. That's what I'd do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. All right, Scotty, all yours.
Thank you
so very much. I'll put the clock up as soon as I get that working.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
60-year-old.
Oh, look at this. Here you go.
Let's see.
Alex has brought us a 60-year-old CRT. 1953.
Wow.
It was a tremendously active year at CBS Hytron with rewarding accomplishments in research and plant development as well as in sales. The CBS Colortron, a revolutionary new picture tube for color television, was developed. Ground was broken for a huge new picture tube plant at Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Yes.
Sales were 28% higher than the preceding year. This is compared to the complex picture tube of other manufacturers. Left. The CBS Colortron. Right.
CBS Colortron.
Look how simple the Colortron is.
Oh, well, it's obviously better then.
And it has satisfactory convergence and focus.
Oh, as long as it's satisfactory.
We had to worry about that in those days. Its intricate and heavy screen mask assembly was sensitive to electrical and mechanical damage and was hard to keep in register. That's the earlier flatter planar mask color tube design.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. See, Alex keeps all of the financial reports from his investments.
You said that's from 1953?
1953 CBS annual report.
The year I was born.
Wow. Oh, look at this. Here scientists are Healy sealing the tube to its funnel.
Oh, man.
Operator assembles the tricolor red, green, and blue electron gun of the CBS Colortron. CBS Colortron masks serve as negatives to photographically print tricolor screens directly on faceplates. Wow, they probably could only make a very few of these. And here we go, the master test station.
Oh, yeah, man. That's where I'd want to sit.
There's a good job.
Yep. How long until CBS seeded to RCA?
Man, talk about radiation.
That's right.
Probably weren't doing that for very long.
Right. RCA was NBC, right?
Yeah.
Bake ovens are placed overhead to increase floor space in the Kalamazoo plant, now in construction. Charles F. Strohmeyer, President, CBS Hytron Division.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very cool, man.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
Alex has such great stuff.
He does.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
When did you get your picture on the Colbert stage? Was that recent?
Yeah, it was in New York in October.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
He knows.
Oh, man, I can't wait to go to the Colbert show sometime.
Big shots.
What a band.
Yeah.
John Batista and Stay Human. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great band. Every time they go to commercial, like, oh, no, stay on the show. Stay on the band. I want to hear the band.
And the band plays the whole break.
Yeah, I know.
I think they play for the audience in the warm-up.
Right, yeah.
We've been talking in the chat room about plasma versus OLED and, you know, how what are the advantages, disadvantages. And one of the biggest advantages of plasma over any other current flat-screen technology is that the motion detail is better. And the reason is plasma shows a picture each frame by flashing it onto the screen a bunch of times. And it's kind of a complicated process, but the amount of time that the frame is flashed each time during the 16 milliseconds that it's on, it decreases. And there's black in between. LCD and OLED both operate on a principle called sample and hold, which basically means that the entire frame is shown there the entire time of the frame. And that leads to more motion blur. And so what they do is they insert black frames once or more between each frame, several times maybe during the frame's display. And that sort of simulates what happens in a plasma. and that helps motion blur. They also do this frame interpolation, which plasma never had to do. This is one of the band-aids that LCD and OLED now too has to do in order to replicate the sharpness of motion that a plasma had naturally. So that's one reason why people like plasma. The disadvantage of plasma, of course, is image retention. Now, OLED and even LCD have image retention. They still do, but it's just not nearly as bad as plasma. And plasma got a lot better over its lifetime. The very early plasmas, man, image retention and burn-in, permanent burn-in, was a real problem. And by the time we got to the last Kuros and the last Panasonics, it wasn't nearly as much of a problem, but it was more of a problem than it was than it's ever been for LCD and for OLED too. So that's another problem. Another problem with LCD anyway that plasma did not have was off-axis viewing. So as you go from straight on to off-axis, most LCDs start looking pretty funky. Contrast goes down, black level goes up, colors become desaturated. And with plasma, that's simply not an issue at all. Now, you might ask, well, it's not really an issue on OLED either, is it? Well, not in the same way. It's not as much of an issue by far. But as you get off axis from an OLED, the colors do shift a little bit, or they tend to. So that is why you do get something. You get some sort of an effect like that in an OLED, but not on a plasma, not at all. So I used to say all the time when plasma was still around and it was plasma versus LCD that, LCD had to implement a bunch of Band-Aids in order to fix inherent problems that plasma never had in the first place, which is why one of the reasons I was always a big plasma fan. Motion blur is one of them. Off-axis performance is another one. But despite the fact that LCD had implemented Band-Aids like frame interpolation, like black frame insertion, like LED backlighting with full array with local dimming, which increases the contrast, which is another inherent problem of LCD. Those are all sort of Band-Aid fixes that plasma never had to worry about. Now, OLED has even better blacks than plasma, and that's one reason why plasma had better blacks than LCD was that it's what's called a self-emissive display. And so each pixel emits its own light rather than with LCD. You have a light source behind the panel and the LCDs let more or less of it through. But even when they're all the way closed down, some light gets through. They're not perfect. They don't perfectly block the light. Whereas a self-emissive display like plasma or OLED, you can simply turn off each pixel and it doesn't emit any light and it gets to be really, really black. So with plasmas, they ran some current through the whole system, even in a black screen, which is why plasmas didn't reach perfect black. OLEDs reach perfect black, absolute zero, so to speak. So that's kind of a rundown of some of the differences between them and why some people might still want to find an used plasma somewhere. But if you do, go for the best ones you can get. They're going to be expensive. This is a rare example of a consumer electronics product that has probably actually gained value over time, not lost value. Most consumer electronics, a couple of years out and they're worthless. Not so with good plasmas.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
So long.
See you next week.
And have a pleasant tomorrow. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, virtual reality headgear, artificial intelligence, real intelligence. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still reach us. Just use Skype. Won't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number and all that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Tehachapi, California. Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Hey, it's good to talk to you. I'm good. The reason I'm calling today is I have an
I'm concerned about security and bill paying, online banking, purchasing online, all of that kind of stuff.
Reasonably so, yes.
So what I have right now is I have a what was originally a Windows 7 HP laptop that I upgraded to Windows 10.
Okay.
And then I have an old desktop that has Windows Vista on it, but I've been considering putting Linux on that.
There you go.
Is Linux, is that the way to go for security?
Well, certainly, either way, you're going to be secure. Here are the risks of online shopping and online banking. As with any stuff in the real world or online, the real danger comes at the merchant's end because they get your number, right? The bank's end. So if the bank's not secure, the merchant's not secure, not much you can do. As long as your transaction is using HTTPS, you know, you see HTTP:// If you see the S in there or you see the padlock, the green padlock, then your data is completely encrypted from you to the merchant. And so it's not visible to anybody but the merchant. What the merchant does with it is another matter. The most secure way to do this is to use Android Pay or Apple Pay. In general, the way Apple Pay works, and if you have a Macintosh, the new Macintoshes, or if you have an iPhone, you know, it uses your fingerprint to authenticate you. You associate a card with it. But the merchant doesn't get the credit card. The merchant just gets a token, which he can't use, he can't steal. So that even protects you against the merchant's poor security practice. So that's the most secure way to do it. Now, the reason people often do use Linux for home banking is because Linux is less hackable. And so there is that concern, you know, at your end, if somebody's got a keystroke logger, something watching all your typing or something like that, they can see what you're typing.
And that's where my concern was. I don't, unfortunately, get a chance to listen to you very often, but I have heard you recently talking about problems with Windows 10 and recommending just getting, an Android notebook or whatever.
Chromebook, yeah. Chromebook is more secure. Chromebook is Linux. It's Linux with kind of a nicer interface on top of it, basically the Chrome browser on top of it. Those are pretty secure. I don't know of any exploits. The only exploits at all on a Chromebook are malicious Chrome extensions. So if you don't install, you know, all sorts of weird Chrome extensions, you're fine. Now, the other way to go, really paranoid people will get a USB key from a known good source. That's another place you can get in trouble is with a USB key from a known good source. And they'll put a secure version of Linux on it. Now, there's two excellent choices there. One is called Tails, T-A-I-L-S. Better way to do it even would be a DVD. The problem is, because DVDs can't be written to, but the problem is very few computers have DVD players anymore. So most people put it on a USB key. Tails.boum.org. That's a very good one. And then there's this new Cubes OS, which is a Linux-like operating system specifically designed for security, Qubes-OS.org. Similar idea, maybe even a little more safe because it's not Linux. So, you know, you get some security by obscurity, by not using a common operating system. So using but I think Tails is certainly adequate, Cubes or Tails, either one. If you're super paranoid, that would be the choice.
Yeah, I'm looking for something to actually install on my computer. I don't really want to necessarily work off a boot DVD
The advantage of that is nothing gets preserved, right?
Yeah.
So even if you got a malicious program somehow in there, the fact that you're rebooting each time can help you. But like I said, this is the truly paranoid. A Chromebook is probably the best way to do this.
Okay.
That's the easiest. I mean, that means buying new hardware.
And that's better than using a Linux operating system?
It is a Linux operating system.
I mean, but...
And it's designed around security. So, for instance, the Chromebook, if any malicious boot software gets on there, it won't boot up. It'll warn you, and you could power wash it and start over.
Oh, wow.
So I think the easiest thing for almost everybody, unless you really want to geek out, is just to get a Chromebook. And they're cheap. If you said, I'm going to only do online shopping and banking on my Chromebook, I think you'd be in very good shape that way. Just okay. Use it maybe specifically for the stuff that you want to keep secure.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, I'll look into that.
Thank you. That would be the best way to do that. You don't have to – I mean, people are so – some there are people – you know, if you're Edward Snowden – I mean, if you saw the documentary about Edward Snowden, Citizen 4, he was so paranoid that he wouldn't type in plain view. Before he would write anything, he'd put a jacket over him and the computer in case there was a camera in the room recording his keystrokes. And by the way, if you're that paranoid, a Chromebook won't help because you still have to type passwords. If there's a camera looking over your shoulder, well, it's going to record it. So get a Chromebook and a cape. A cape would be very good. And then just pull the cape up over over your head. Tails and Cubes OS, by the way, can be installed directly on the computer. The reason people use it on a USB key is so that they have kind of a scrubbable situation. But you can install them and run them on the computer, and they're secured versions of Linux. But I think Google's done a very good job of securing Chrome OS. That's one of the reasons I recommend it all the time. Rich, Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hi, Rich. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I bought a new 10-inch tab Android with Marshmallow on it and had a keyboard. It's almost as good as having a mini computer. But I can't get it to work with my old printers.
Yeah, because there's no parallel port.
Yeah.
Or USB port.
Well, you get to go through my open.
Well, you can. You have to go out. You have to buy some additional hardware. So the newer printers often are Wi-Fi, right? And so they'll work with the kind of the traditional Wi-Fi printing systems like Google Cloud Print, the non-traditional, I should say, Google Cloud Print or AirPrint from Apple. And if your tablet probably supports Google Cloud Print. So you print from your tablet to the cloud, and then Google knows where your printers are and will print to the printers. Problem is, your printer is not wireless. It's a wired printer. It uses USB or even an older interface called the parallel port. If that's the case, then you can buy a print server that is just a little device that plugs into your printer and turns it into a wireless printer. There are a lot of these. They're around $100. We had an advertiser. I'm trying to remember the name. I don't even remember the name here. Lantronics, that was it. The X-Print server. That really worked quite well. But there are a number of other companies. So if you look for Wi-Fi print server, you could then connect it to your computer, and then your computer gets connected to the internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by those good folks at Audible. I love Audible. Love it. Have I said how much I like Audible? I love it. I love it so much. Lisa and I both love it, my wife, that we set up an Amazon Echo with speakers in our bedroom. Not talking to you. And I have an Echo here too.
I can't find the answer to the question.
Well, it's so cool because I can do it right now. Echo, read to me. And she'll read
me. Getting the book from Leo's Audible library.
See?
Resuming man search for meaning. There's 22 minutes left in the chapter and 2 hours 49 minutes left in the book.
So we'll listen. It's so awesome.
I'll take that.
I love Audible. We will lie in bed and we will listen to an Audible book. She's listening to a great... Echo, stop. She's listening... I'm sorry. She's listening to... I don't want to miss anything. She's listening to a great Carl Hiaasen novel. Oh, so funny. So funny. So we'll listen. If we want to laugh, we'll lie in bed and we'll listen. It's better than watching TV because the pictures that you draw in your mind are so great. You know, people, you know, everybody talking about the Star Wars movies and the science fiction movies and TV shows. I far prefer to listen. In fact, if you like Star Wars, they've got all the Star Wars novelizations, including the Rogue One novelization. I think it's coming soon. So you know, and then in your mind, you see it's much better than the stuff they can make or even computer generate on screen. Your imagination's a wonderful thing. I love audiobooks from Audible. I like to mix up fiction and nonfiction. So I like to learn a little bit and then be entertained. As you heard, I'm listening to a pretty heavy story, but a wonderful story by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. He's a famous psychiatrist who was interned at Auschwitz, and it's his story right after he got out of the concentration camp about that. But my next book, oh, I can't wait. I just got it. The new Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run, and Bruce the Boss reads it. See, the thing is, whatever kind of stuff you like to listen to or read, you will find. Oh, I always look, Michael Lewis, every one of his books. This is a new one. This is a new one, just came out. Oh, wait a minute, add that to my wish list. I got a very big wish list now. Anything Michael Lewis writes is great. He's the guy who wrote The Big Short and the movie is based on. I read Flash Boys. Liar's Poker was his first. Oh, it was incredible. Moneyball. See, before I go see a movie, I will listen to the book. You know, science fiction, bestsellers. They even have college courses. The great courses are on Audible. I mean, that's what they call them, great courses. The best college lecturers. And if you search for great courses, you'll see in every subject, 38 books that changed the world, The Science of Energy, Resources and Power Explained, An Economic History of the World Since 1400, Turning Points in Middle Eastern. I mean, you can go on and on and on and really learn. I think you get a college course here. Now, we're going to get you your first book free so you could see if this is for you. I've been listening to The Medieval World. It's really good. Your Best Brain, The Science of Brain Improvement, How You Decide, The Science of Human Decision-Making. These are all college courses. Really fantastic. My wish list, though, is where I put the stuff I really can't wait to hear. Because every month when I get my credits, I gotta listen. You see, I just added the Michael Lewis. I'm interested in this one. This is 60 hours long. Jerusalem by Alan Moore. Has anybody read that? Came out last month. And people are just going crazy about it, but it's like pretty strange. you know, if you've got a commute, if you go to the gym, I listen on the treadmill. Like I said, I listen in bed. I listen when I'm doing the dishes, walking the dog, anytime. On my phone, on my tablet. It works on a Chromebook. It works on a computer. If you haven't read Hackers, 40th anniversary now. Or the 40th? No, 30th anniversary now. This is the 25th anniversary edition of Stephen Levy's amazing book about the early pioneers of the computer revolution. You got to get your subscription. It's just endless, great stuff. Audible.com/techguy. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a subscription and a book a month. Your first 30 days are free, though. In fact, you cancel any time in the first 30 days, but your book will be yours forever. You keep it. You download it and you keep it, and it's awesome. This is another one. I got to add this to my wish list. Hillbilly Elegy. Hearing so many good things about this. J.D. Vance tells a story of his Appalachian upbringing and family. Thank you for being late. Love Thomas Friedman, too. An Optimist's Guide to Thriving in the Age of Accelerations. You see the problem I have here? It's like the best bookstore in the world. And you know, when people who, I just added that to my wish list too. When people who listen to Audible get together, that's what we all talk about. Oh, what did you listen to? Is it good? What? Oh, unbelievable. Audible, you got to get your first book and get into the Audible habit. Audible.com/techguy. And we thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 88. Ask Leo. Sybil in the chat room has given me my motto. Without errors, there would be no tech guy. It's true. If everything were perfect, you wouldn't need me. We wouldn't need we. we just go along and, you know, there are, you notice, by the way, there are very few shows about toaster ovens, microwave ovens, hammers. They don't break. Well, they do, but not the same, not as frequently, I guess. Gary Laguna Niguel, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gary.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Dandy. I have got an iPhone 6S, and it apparently has the same battery problem that they did to recall. It'll go,
yes.
Matter of fact, I might lose you in the middle of talking
yes.
this, but
suddenly drops, go just half, goes,
it'll go
boom.
Pardon me?
Yeah, the battery just goes to zero.
It goes to zero right in the middle. I mean, it's like crazy, and,
yeah.
and it's been doing that for a long time.
Bring it to Apple. They'll fix it.
No, they won't, because the serial number's not in their little, their bracket of serial numbers that are supposedly the recall. So they won't fix it. But so I'm stuck with the phone, which...
That's terrible.
Yeah. The bad part is the phone... I love the phone in some respects. I don't like the battery. And the other part is, if you look at it, it cracks. The glass...
I know.
And I replaced the glass four times.
I know.
I'm not going to replace it anymore.
No more.
So if I were to take it in anyway, they would look at it and go, it's actually functioning cracked. But if it's cracked, they'd look at it and go, oh, well... This voids everything. And it's
yeah,
like,
no, yeah, yeah.
So
the best you could hope for is a kind genius who would say, well, we'll give you a new one for $200. That's the best you could hope for.
I don't even think that would happen. They would. I'm not even going to try it because I want something that a battery lasts longer. So I'm looking at either the old Note, not the new Note that burns up, because I heard the batteries are supposed to last good. There's a Minolta phone that, you know, the ad looks great. But
I'll give you the best battery life out there. There's two. The Sony Xperias have very good battery life, and my current favorite that's kind of got remarkable battery life, but it's not surprising because it's big and thick, is the Motorola Z or Z phone, the Z Pure or the Z Play. Really good battery life, and it's a very nice Android phone. But you want an iPhone is only, you know, I have to say the battery life is excellent on the newer, on the bigger ones. Now, you had a Plus or a regular 6S?
I had a Plus. Yeah.
And that's as good as the battery life gets, but you just have bad batteries in that one.
I just use, well, I think this is one of those.
You have a bad, yeah. And you know what? I bet if you watch, if you wait, they probably expand the recall to a larger set because it's, yeah.
I've heard good news with the Samsung. It's I think the 6 or the 7.
Yeah, I've owned all the Notes since the first one. None of them were
pretty. Not the Note. I'm talking about it's a sport one where you can drop it in. I ran into a gal and she's saying
it's the S6 Active.
That's it, Active.
Yeah,
I thought it was sport, but Active. She says she loves it. She's dropped it everywhere and it doesn't break. Is that true? And do the batteries last? Okay.
Well, all phones will break if you drop them in the right way. The active is absolutely a much more robust phone. And I would get the S7 Active. That's the most recent one. Okay. Battery life's pretty good on that. Not great, not as good as your 6S Plus, unfortunately. But you wouldn't know cuz you have a bad battery in your 6S Plus.
Does it have a battery that I can replace?
No.
Oh, so the
nobody makes
Samsung is,
yeah. There are very few. There's only one phone, to my knowledge. I think the LG that still has a replaceable battery, and the reason is they want these. Everybody wants thinner phones.
Okay.
And you can't make it thin if you can replace the battery. I like the. If you go back to a Note 4, those had replaceable batteries, and then you don't care about battery life. You just get an extra battery and keep it charged, and you just swap them out when it's time.
Was the Note 4, like, I could probably find one where some guy hasn't used it much. Is it, you know, online? Is it a good phone?
Yeah, it's an excellent phone and very good battery life. And get a second battery.
There you go.
And you don't even care what the battery life is at that point.
How's the camera on the thing?
It's okay. It's older, right? I mean, the cameras have gotten very good, starting with the S6, and which would have been the Note 5. That's when the batteries really took off. But the Note 5 was, I'm pretty sure the Note 5 was sealed also. Yeah.
Now, the Minolta, is that the new Minolta? I am not
familiar with the Minoltas. Their Motorola is the one I was mentioning.
Oh, Motorola.
Yeah, the latest Motorola Z Play or Z Pure, either one, has very good battery life. Those are Android. But, well, I guess at this point you're Android, right?
I'm iPhone, but...
No, I'm saying if you don't want an Apple...
Yeah, I'm not going to go Apple.
Yeah, if you don't want an Apple, you're going with an Android phone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would say the Motorola Z or the Sony Xperias are very good phones. Kind of, I'm not crazy about the Sonys, but the battery life is very, very good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. They just don't. They don't inspire me.
Is the Motorola a new phone?
Yeah, the current Motorola Z, which came out, last few months. Good camera.
Okay.
Nice software. Very nice software. Amazing battery. Those are the ones that have. They have these backs that you snap on. Including an extra battery pack that you snap on with magnets. And they have promised, Motorola has promised, owned by Lenovo now, a Chinese company, they've promised to release a new back every month for at least the next 12 months. So there's updated camera backs. I think they have a Hasselblad camera back. There's speakers. There's better batteries. There's all sorts of little doohickeys you can snap on the back.
Right. Okay. So the Motorola has good life. I think I'll go. That sounds good.
I think you'll love it. I actually been tempted. I don't really need a new phone in any way, but I've been very tempted to go out and get a Motorola Z. Get the Z Pure or the Z. Are you on Verizon or are you?
I'm actually on Sprint. I like it. It's cheap and it's good.
Yeah, I love Sprint.
They've done me well.
Yeah, I love Sprint.
Well, it's like I got it when they were doing the sale, and it's $45 unlimited. It's great. They want me to not do it anymore because that's like an awesome deal. But I get good enough service with it, so I'm okay with it.
I think you will like these new Motorola phones. Big batteries. They're as big as your Note. Big screen.
Uh-huh.
I think you'll like it.
Where's the best place to buy them?
Amazon sells them. And you could also go into Sprint and see if they have them, because you might get a better deal from Sprint.
Okay. Motorola Z.
You get the Z Play or the Z Pure?
Z Play or Z Pure. Okay,
yeah.
I will write that down. I really appreciate
Call me back when you get it and let me know. Give me a review.
I will. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I'm sorry about the... That sounds to me like Apple's problem extends beyond the serial numbers that they've agreed to replace these phones for free. They acknowledge there's a problem. The battery goes from 50% to 0%. Boom. And Apple said, we'll replace it, but it has to be within this range of serial numbers. Now you have a 6S, but it's just a little outside those serial numbers. They're not going to replace it. Boy, that makes me mad. They clearly have a problem with that. And they need to, you know, what'll happen is, you know, as people complain, they'll expand the range of serial numbers. Oh, well. By the way, everything we talk about here, including links to the products I mentioned, are all available at our website for free. No sign-up needed. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. It's a family affair. Johnny Jett's here, our travel guru, and the whole family's out to visit you and Natalie, and of course your brand new baby boy Jack.
Hi. Yes, hi, John. Jack's getting baptized this weekend, so a lot of them made it out.
So your sister Carol's there. I just met her. She's a quite attractive woman from Florida, and your dad, who is also a stunner, visiting from Connecticut. Who else is out there?
One of my best friends from Connecticut. He's the godfather, and then
that's great.
Natalie's family's here. Her mom just flew in, and
now
so.
You're the travel guru. Do they come to you and say, hey, Johnny, help us get a good deal on flights?
Some of them do. Not all of them. But, yeah, the smart ones do.
Yeah. So, the rest of them are going to johnnyjet.com and signing up secretly for your travel newsletter and getting that.
I went to LAX 3 times yesterday.
What? To pick people up.
Twice to pick people up, but the first time was to do a thing on CBS about phones on the plane. So I thought we could talk about this quickly. I assume you heard about this.
The Galaxy Note?
No.
No? Actually. What?
So the transportation department has said they're most likely going to allow phones on the plane.
Oh no, please no, say no, no.
I know.
It's not the technical issue. It's people going, and then I said, I told him, Marge, you can't do that. And then they're shouting, and the plane is a commotion, and oh my goodness.
Exactly. Well,
we already know what it's going to be like, because there's always one jerk who has to be told by the flight attendant, sir, you need to turn your phone off now, sir. I'll be with you in a minute. I'm anyway, I said to him.
You're speaking to an acquirer. So now the thing is that the DOT says it's most likely not going to happen for a couple of years.
Good.
But, you know, they think it's up to the airlines. It should be up to the airlines.
Well, it's always been up to the captain, right? It's always been up to the pilot.
Well,
pilot is the king of the hill.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, right now you can VoIP and some people do it. You know, there's ways around it, which we're not going to talk about. But, you know, the Wi-Fi is getting so much better in the sky. And, you know, they already have.
Well, yeah. Well, your cell phone won't work up there, will it?
No, but, I mean, it can, yeah, if you're doing VoIP.
You could, actually, and we know that sometimes people do make phone calls from the sky. It is a very bad thing for the networks. Cellular companies hate it because you're traveling so fast that the handoff from cell tower to cell tower to cell tower is almost boom, 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 boom. And it drives their network crazy. It will also drive your battery crazy.
Right.
But I hope it doesn't happen.
Because, you know, they allow it on buses and subways and trains. You can get off those. You cannot get off of a flight.
That's why on trains they have quiet cars.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a potential they would do that on the plane, too. But you know what? This is going to lead to a lot more fights. I mean, I hear people 10 rows away from me on the phone.
You can't have a quiet area on a plane. That's just as silly as having a non-smoking area on a plane. You can't. It's. Oy.
I know. So that was the big news down here yesterday.
Wow, I did not hear that. I mean, they've been talking about this for a while.
Right. It was just Thursday the DOT announced that they're thinking about relaxing.
It's hard for them to justify the technical excuse, which is the excuse they've always given. Oh, it interferes with the navigation equipment.
Right.
We know that's not true because now we can have our iPads on. Now, can I turn on my Wi-Fi? Not that it'll do any good, but like, I don't have to go into airplane mode. Is that what that means?
We'll find out. Yeah. Probably. All most right. likely. We'll
wow.
see.
Big story. All right.
But I got a cool app for you.
Yes,
so
sir.
Do you have a dollar bill on you?
I've used this app and I love it.
Okay. 1600.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's iPhone and Android, right?
Correct, and it's free. And, you know, the White House is arguably one of the most desired places for people to visit. And although after 9/11, it's been so much
Will it work with a 5? To get in. Will it work with a 20?
No, it's just a dollar. I haven't tried it.
I don't know if I have a single. I have a 10.
That's not a bad problem.
Will it work with Andrew Jackson?
No, I don't think
Hamilton.
So.
Never mind. I like that. I got a Jackson and a Hamilton. I'll try it with a Hamilton.
Anyway, anyone at home, you know, download this app, 1600. It's free. Grab a dollar bill, and it's really cool. It's interactive. It's a 3D video app. You can move your phone around to different portions of the bill.
It's augmented reality is what it is.
Right.
Yeah. So you have to start the programs. It's free, as you said, and then you aim it at the dollar bill. And the White House will appear.
Is that a dollar?
No, it's a 10. Like I said, I only have a Hamilton.
It's not going to work.
Why wouldn't they make it work with any currency?
Well, I'm sure they were just testing it out first.
Our friends in Canada can't use this.
Yeah.
I got a lot
of Canadians here. But I love it. And, you know, there are ways to visit the White House, obviously. You have to, you know, you can book in advance.
No, you know, can you? I thought you couldn't anymore.
No, you can, yeah.
Because when I was younger, of course, we used to see the China and all that stuff. And I really loved that. But I thought after 9/11 that they didn't let anybody inside.
No, they do. You have to book about 3 months in advance.
Do you have to get a member of Congress to bring you?
That's one way, but you have to have, you know, government IDs. It's a real long line. You have to have a tour.
That's how it is in England. Yes. In London, you know, you could get a tour of Parliament, but you have to get an MP, a member of Parliament, to approve host you.
Right. I think I called in a couple of years ago. We got invited to some travel blogger summit, and we still had to wait in line of over an hour. And there were people next to us who were doing the tour that they signed up for. And same thing. So that we went through the regular thing. You just need to have your IDs. If you're a foreigner, you need to have your passport. It's really cool. And this app actually helps you, you know, get a little taste of it. And it's fun. And it's really cool. So I love it.
The White House, if you get a chance to go, is absolutely worth seeing. It's amazing.
And especially Christmas time. And this is actually the time of year we were here. Yeah. So we got to see all the trees.
Oh, what fun.
It's a real lovely time of year to be there.
The app is called 1600, and it is free for iPhone and iOS, but you need a dollar bill.
You need a dollar bill. So
don't have any more.
It doesn't have to be crisp. Yep. And by the way, so I'm looking at their website right now. Requests can be submitted up to 3 months in advance and no less than 21 days.
Okay.
So.
And they probably have to vet you and stuff, right? Security.
They do, and yeah. It's first come, first serve. Oh, and it also says that, you know, tours are subject to last minute
cancel. I think every kid in junior high school should go to D.C. at least once and do the tour and see it. I want to bring our 14-year-old, bring Michael, and you know what? If I arrange it ahead of time, I might be able to get a tour. That'd be really cool. That'd be really cool.
For sure. So I have a quick website.
Yes, sir.
I do have Canadians here. There's a website called Maple Match. I was going to announce this right after the election or right before it, saying if your candidate didn't win. Did I mention this one? Maybe I did mention it.
No, I don't think so. Maple Match.
So if you want to meet a Canadian yeah. and you want to get out of the country.
Oh, my goodness.
This is a way to do it. It's kind of like Match.com, but it's a way for you to meet a Canadian. And Canadians love Americans. And
some of the nicest people I know are Canadian.
Yeah. So I think it's a pretty – I mean, it's a funny website, but
is it serious? Like they?
Yes, it's serious. Yeah, it's serious. It was real popular, you know, right during the election time, and I was going to mention it then, but then I decided not to get political. But I figured since I have a house full of Canadians right now, it's time to do it.
So, that's right. Your wife is from Toronto. I forgot.
She is.
Yeah,
and one of her best friends is here. Her mom's here, and more are coming.
So, did you use Maple Match to meet her?
No, actually, fortunately, I did not. But I can tell you that meeting a Canadian, marrying a Canadian is an amazing thing. You know, they're so nice, friendly.
No, they're very sweet people. I really like – but one thing I've found, they're very nice unless you get on their bad side. And then they're the worst, the meanest people I've ever met.
I don't know about that.
Oh, no, it's true. Just stay nice to your mother-in-law.
Their border control are the meanest.
Well, no, it's – yeah, well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you know how to get a Canadian?
Canadians are nice.
How to get a Canadian to say you're sorry? To
step on their
sorry?
Toes.
You got it.
Thank you, JohnnyJet.com. More travel news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Josh is on the line from Denver, Colorado. Hello, Josh. Oh, I got to push this button. Hi, Josh.
Hey,
I got to push the button. There you go. Hey, Josh. Welcome. Oh, did I lose you? I heard voices. Are you there? Josh.
You hear me okay?
Yeah, now I hear you. Okay.
Hi, there we go.
There we go. Now you got to push your button.
Glad to finally get a chance to talk to you.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
About a year ago, I bought one of those like HP Stream 8-inch tablets.
Yeah,
I was I'm an inventor and I need to do some testing with.
Okay.
Anyways, now I want to sell this because they're still worth like about $100.
God, you paid like $200 for it, and they're still worth $100. Wow.
Yeah, I know. And it has this ability, I think. And people, you know, like that, I guess.
They're pretty. I mean, it's – this HP really kind of did a breakthrough with this. I thought it was quite a nice little laptop.
Yeah. But I'm trying to figure out a way to – I don't want to wipe the hard drive because I don't want to, I guess, avoid wasting the time of having to reinstall the OS.
Right.
But I also want to make sure any data that I left behind is, you know – is wiped away, not just, you know, format the table.
Yeah, and of course, Windows has these recovery tools that you can, it's in there. If you hit Windows key and type recovery, you'll see that you can wipe the drive and reinstall Windows, go back to the factory state. In fact, HP offers it. The problem with that is it isn't really erasing the data. In fact, Johnny Jett, just our travel guy, learned this. He had asked me, he had these hard drives, he was going to sell them, and he asked me about erasing the data. He said, well, I formatted it. And I said, that's not enough. And I told him to go out and get something called Derek's Boot and Nuke. You could just Google D-B-A-N, D-B-A-N, and you'll find it. And that fully erases the drive. Now, fortunately, he didn't listen to me. Because before he did that, he remembered, oh, my gosh, there's wedding pictures I don't have anywhere else on this drive. And I told him at the time, well, it's a good thing you only formatted it because those pictures are completely recoverable. We gave him a name of a free program called Recova, R-E-C-O, like recover with an A instead of an R, Recova from Piriform. And it was able to get all the pictures back because he had only formatted it. And the problem is that HP Restore, that's all it does too. It just formats it. Now, it's going to overwrite parts of the drive, so some of it won't be seen. But if you really are saying, I want to sell this and I don't want anybody to see my super secret plans for world domination, then get D-Ban. Now, I don't know if you ever made the HP recovery disks, because that's what you really want. If you made the HP recovery disks, and you may still be able to do that now, put it on a USB key, run, get D-Ban, download it, run it. It'll wipe the drive. And what it, the way it wipes it is it writes it ones on it and then erases those and then writes zeros on it. You only need to do one pass. It's fine. You just want to overwrite the data instead of just formatting it, because formatting it doesn't erase data. It just rewrites the table of contents and it leaves the data there. And, you know, that's, as I pointed out, easily recoverable. So D-B-A-N, D-Ban, it'll erase all the drive, and then you'll do the HP Restore. And that's kind of what you want to do. If you're selling that, a computer, you don't want to have your programs on it. You don't have, you know, not just your data, but you don't want to have your apps on there either. What you want is it to look like it just came from the factory. And that's what the recovery will do. But again, HP's Restore will not erase your data. So you want to do D-Ban, then HP Restore. Make sure you have the HP Restore before you do that. Dan, Sanger, California. Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I had a question for you. My mom is interested in getting a tablet.
Okay.
But the thing is, she's a little older, and she has an issue with her handshake.
Yeah.
So I was telling her that she might have trouble with the touchscreen.
Yeah, if it's hard for her to hold her hand steady, so that might be difficult.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking more about a Chromebook. That way she would be able to use...
Can she use a mouse or a trackpad, you know?
I think she probably could use a mouse.
Okay.
So I was thinking, I saw Lenovo has their N22 on sale at Amazon today. I think it's their $300 model, but it's like $180.
Wow, good deal.
And it has 4 gigs RAM. And, it, you know.
That's actually a really nice one. They make that for schools. A lot of schools use it. It's got a Celeron in it, so it's a real processor. I think that's a very good choice.
Okay.
I think that's a very good choice, yeah.
And it's, I think something that's in the bucket that was kind of rugged, too. So I thought, well, that would be good, too, just in case.
Yeah. Now, the only issue for older folks is it's a little smaller screen. It's an 11. It's almost a little under 12-inch screen.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know how her eyesight is, but that, you know, they make Chromebooks with 14-inch screens. Dell makes a 14-inch. Acer makes a 14-inch, very nice 14-inch, but they're a little more expensive. That's a good deal. Mm-hmm. That price is a good deal.
No, I saw this one has an HDMI out.
Yeah, you could put it on a big screen. That's a good point. Yep. 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 You totally could do that, and she would be able to read it much more easily. You can actually plug a mouse into it, too. If she can't use a trackpad very well, but she can use a mouse, you can. These also support mice or mouses.
Okay. Can I ask you something else real quick?
Sure, of course.
Have you tried the Google Wi-Fi yet? I know you were.
Yes, I have it. It's sitting right in front of me. I tried it last night. I haven't done a thorough test of it. It's funny. What the first time I tried the Eero, this is a new category of these little small, they're hockey puck like Wi-Fi routers, and they use a mesh networking system. So you generally get several of them. One of them's connected to the cable modem or DSL modem, and the rest are spread strategically through the house. And by doing that, you get a much broader connection. Netgear makes the Orbi. There's the Eero's, E-E-R-O. Google's just made their Wi-Fi. They just came out this week. There's something called the Plume. That's similar. That plugs in, but that one you have to have in each room. I'll tell you, I was unimpressed by the setup on the Google, and I had the same problem I had with the Eero when I first got an Eero. I couldn't get the base units far enough away to spread the Wi-Fi. They all had to be in the same room. Well, what good is that? And the Eero, I don't know if they've fixed it or what, but now the Eero, I've got them spread out all over the house. They work great. I've been very happy. They're a sponsor of some of our shows, I should mention. So disclaimer there. But the Google, and I haven't had long enough to really test it, but for some reason, the same problem last night, I plugged in the base station, works fine. I go down halfway to the other end of the house, plug it in. It says, no, you're too far. Get a little closer. No, you're too far. Get a little closer. Finally, I'm in the same room. It's like, well, what's the point? I don't want three routers in one room. That's not doing me any good.
Yeah, so, we have a 2,400 square foot house, but we have
three Eeros would be great. Now these are expensive. The Googles are $100 less.
Right.
You know what? If you can hold off, I'll have more test results next weekend. You know, I hate to review something after one day. But so far, the Eeros have been amazing. And I'm seeing very good reviews about the speed of Netgear's Orbi. So that's another one. Even more expensive.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, hold on a second, Dan.
Okay.
I'm always hesitant to pan something on the basis of one night. So one thing that I think is possible is that since the same thing happened to me with the Eero. Now, I must have a challenging house, right? But then the Eero got fixed somehow. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if... I know that the Googles, I think all of these do this, get better over time. They learn. And I'm wondering if I have to wait for a while. This is what I'm going to try this week. Is I'm going to plug it in and let it learn, or whatever it does, get better, and see if it does better. If it doesn't, then I'm really frustrated, like, this is no good.
Right.
But the funny thing is, the same exact thing happened with the Eero, so maybe there's something, maybe they get better. I don't know. I don't understand it myself.
We have a house that's almost 100 years old.
Oh, so that's more of a problem, because you probably have plaster, you might have...
We do.
Yeah.
And so I have a couple areas that are just, dead zones. My Wi-Fi is just bad.
If you can afford the Eero, and I know they're a sponsor, and people are going to say, well, they're just paying you to say this, but it's really not true. In fact, I panned the Eero for that reason when I first got it. And they said,
I remember you saying that.
Yeah. And then I got another set, and now I've got two. I bought two more. I've got five, because we have a 4,500 square foot area. And Lisa won't let me. I tried to put the Google in last night. She wouldn't let me. She said, no, don't touch it. It's working perfectly.
Well, part of my thing, too, is I'm really impaired. And so I was reading reviews for the Google Home, the Google Wi-Fi thing, and they were saying they were able to do it on their phones.
Same with the Eero. The setup is very similar.
And so I know Google pays some attention to accessibility.
Yeah, no, they do a good... I think you'll like the software is... The Eero software is a little spare. The other concern for me with the Google is I wanted to use it in bridge mode. And they say, if you're in bridge mode, we can't do any of the things, the fancy things like that we do with if you're not. And that was kind of a disadvantage to me because I have a cable modem that does routing. So do I. Yeah, if you can turn off the routing and the cable modem, then you can use the Google. The Eero goes to bridge mode and doesn't warn you. Maybe it does limit what it could do. I haven't seen that. But the Eero in bridge mode says it does all the same things. So I don't understand that.
So is that what I would have to do? Because I have Comcast as well.
Yeah, you're going to put it in bridge mode. Either that or you tell the Comcast modem not to do routing.
No.
I have a business class modem, and you have to pay extra to turn off DHCP.
Nice.
It's like, what?
I have the premium package right now. And I'm like, okay, if I want to get a different router, how do I do this?
Well, you can. Comcast will let you, even with my business class, they'll let you go out and buy one of those surfboards, the old era surfboards. You know where you go is Wirecutter has a review. It's the SB... I can't remember the model numbers. I got the one step up. And that connected to the Eero, that thing doesn't do any routing. The Eero does all the routing. Works marvelously.
Okay.
It's been very, very good. And I even have the home Eero has a second Ethernet port, which I have connected to the 24-port switch. And all of the TV stuff is plugged into that, so I have hardwired. And it works fantastic.
Wow.
when I switched to this new package, they gave me the new modem, and it seems to be a little better, you know, but
Comcast lets you buy your own modem, and I would. Let me tell you which one the wire cutter recommended, because I've been using it and I love it. It's the Motorola Surfboard SB. There's two of them. Hold on here. They say the best one is the SB6183, but I got one step up. I got the six. No, that's the one I got. Oh, no. I got the next step up, which is the six. Well, that's $85. And then I get the next step up, whatever that is. They used to say what it is. But that Motorola Surf, actually, I guess it's an Aris. Aris, ARRIS, Surfboard, SB6183, will replace your Comcast modem, give you DOCSIS 3, and doesn't do any routing. So you then your router can do all the router.
Okay. I'll look into it and see what I find.
Nice to talk to you, Dan.
All right, you too. I'll
have
talk
a good
to you.
One. See ya. Bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time for, a little geeky talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. We can talk about smartphones, smart watches. We can talk about virtual reality as opposed to augmented reality. 8888-ASK-LEO. We can talk about augmented reality, too. Whatever is on your mind, if it's got chip in it, I'd love to talk. Laurel is next in Burbank, California. Hi, Laurel.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are you? Thank you. I have an issue, obviously.
Uh-oh. Okay. Why, obviously? Why don't people ever call and just say, hey, everything's great, just want to let you know? No.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be.
Because tech never is perfect.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, my problem is that, you know, I have a little bit of information and a lot of confidence. Okay, so what happened was my phone, I filled it up, right, this HTC, and it's a Desire 626.
Okay.
Filled it up, and it said, okay, you need more room. And it told me I needed to delete things I wasn't using, etc. Well, the first thing I did was VPN came up, and I decided, okay, I'm going to put a password on this. So I put a simple password on it. And then these Android things came up, and I started disabling, and I disabled the little green guy with the antennas. That was the Android app, I found out. And
do not disable the little green guy with antennas. Oh, no.
I did. Yeah.
Oh, no. No, I don't know what that is. That's just the Android logo, but it was probably some system routine you probably shouldn't have. What happened? Is your phone not working anymore? Uh-oh. Speaking of phones not working, Silence is on the other end of the line. Let me look real quickly and see how much storage. Ah, here's the good news. While that doesn't have a huge amount of storage built in, it does have an SD card slot. So the first thing to do if you're running out of space on your phone, and if you have an SD slot, is to start making sure you put all of the pictures, all the media. Are you there?
Hello?
Oh, you're back.
Yes, I'm sorry. My phone, for some reason, called somebody else while I was talking to you.
Did you tell him about the little green guy with the antenna?
No.
Good.
Because anyway.
Only I would understand you. Don't go around telling people about that because they won't understand.
Okay.
What
the problem that I have is that it comes up on the screen and it won't let me enter the password. The Google Talk thing comes up, but it won't take anything. So I can't get past that to do anything.
Oh, dear. Yeah, okay, so next time, don't just kind of randomly delete stuff. I think you've learned now. Yeah, I don't know what happened. So you can get back into it. But the way you'll get back into it will be by wiping it out. I hope you don't. Do you have anything on there you don't want to lose?
No. Yeah, my pictures.
Okay. Oh, boy.
And I went to several stores, you know, these little repair things, and they just say, we don't know.
Did you tell them about the little green guy with the antennas?
Yes, I did.
Did they start to
Everybody
look at you funny that. And back yeah. away slowly?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sure, lady. The little green guy with the antennas. Yeah, lady, yeah. No. I know. Yeah. That's an Android. I don't know what happened here. Somehow you've locked up the phone. So when you turn it on, does it ask you for a password?
It gives me things like I can get calls, and it gives me little notifications. But when I try to go into it, that's when I have to put the password, when I try to do anything else.
Right, and you can't do that.
I can't do that. It won't. It almost looks like little hieroglyphics in writing, and it.
Do you remember what the password was?
Oh yeah, I've got that.
So you try. You have a keyboard. Do you see a keyboard?
No, it won't give me the keyboard.
Oh, it doesn't give you the keyboard.
Google. Yeah, no keyboard.
Yeah, you must have deleted something pretty important.
Now, is there anyone that can get into that, or do I? I'm thinking maybe I have to send it back to HTC. I don't know.
No, you can get into it. So the problem is you have deleted some sort of critical system file.
Yeah,
I would. Probably. Do you have one thing you could do? Do you have a Windows PC lying around?
Maybe. My son does.
Okay.
I use Linux, so. Yeah.
Oh, good on you. Linux is fine. Wow, I'm impressed. Now I'm going to talk to you at a whole different level, Laurel.
No, you can't, because my other son is the one that got me.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a Linux user, let me tell you. Here's the clue. You want to go out to the command line and type this awk space. No, I'm just kidding you. So if you can get a Windows PC, it's easiest because it has drivers built in for this. You can connect your phone via the USB cable to the computer.
Okay.
And what will happen is, you're still getting notifications. That's good. I'm hoping that what will happen is it'll pop up a notification saying, you plugged in a USB port. And do you want to be PTP or MTP? That's photo transfer protocol or mass storage transfer protocol. If you can choose mass storage. If you can't, you can at least copy the photos off.
Okay.
That's the most important thing on there, right?
Right. And it's only the ones, I backed up everything except the ones that were actually on the phone.
Yay.
The phone
so
I had everything else, but the ones the phone took didn't go to the cloud, you know?
Yeah. So if you could do this with Linux, but generally you need some drivers. Windows comes with them. You plug it in. It should just mount. If it doesn't, there is an Android file transfer program. You can install that. It works on a Mac. That's what you need on a Mac. And it might just mount. And then if it mounts, it looks like a hard drive and you can copy whatever you want off of there. But if you can get it, yeah. So it's either going to show up as a hard drive or as a camera. In either case, you can get the pictures for sure.
Great.
Yay. And then media transfer. Thank you. Not mass storage transfer. Media transfer, MTP. Then what you want to do is do a factory recovery on that phone and get it back to the original factory condition. That'll replace all the missing little green men.
Okay.
Once you chase the little green men out of your Android, you're out of you're in deep trouble.
Yeah, deep trouble.
Deep
trouble. It's the classic, you know, give them a little bit of information. That is much more dangerous than none at all.
We'll also put a link to an article Dr. Mom's given me from How To Geek, which is a great site, on how to get into safe mode, which may or may not work. I'm thinking it won't because I think you've deleted a critical system file. In which case, the best you could do is just copy the data off of it and then restart the phone. To do that, by the way, you'll have to press and hold a variety of odd buttons. Usually, you press the power button and the volume down button at the same time and you hold it until you get into recovery mode. But I'll put a link to how to get into recovery mode in our show notes, too. That's techguylabs.com. And then maybe one of your sons can help you do the recovery.
Okay.
The good news is I think you can get all the data off of there. And once you've done that, I know you can reset the phone and get it back to the way it was when it came from the factory.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so
pleasure.
Very much. And I love your show. I listen to it whenever I can.
Thank you for listening. Take care,
Thank
Laurel.
You.
All right. Bye-bye. Maybe it's power and volume up. Maybe it's volume up. I can never remember. I always have to, you know, as many times as I've done this, recover an Android phone, I have to always look, you know, Google it. How do you recover an HTC Desire? And then you'll find it. You can get the data, and then the factory restore will get everything back to normal. I hope. Unless those little green men are gone forever. Then that could be trouble. No, just joking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The chat room suggesting you boot into safe mode, Laura, but that's easily done, of course. But I don't think it'll solve your problem, because if you can't unlock your phone, safe mode doesn't make it any, doesn't take that away. You still, as for obvious reasons, otherwise bad guys would just say, I see this phone is locked. Let us boot into safe mode and unlock it. So I think safe mode is not the right answer. But if you want to, I did not know this. It's a good tip. On an Android phone, press, it has to be SIMS Android 4.1, press and hold the on-off button until you see the power-off menu. Then press and hold the word power-off until you see a safe mode prompt. That'll put you in safe mode. Safe mode, like on Windows, is a mode where only the base operating system is started. No third-party apps. So that's handy if you've got some other program getting in your way. It's not going to help you unlock the phone if you can't unlock it. Terry in Amarillo, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Leo. Everything is working well, and I just wanted to let you know. I wish.
What was wrong before? Oh, you wish. Oh, I get it. you're one of those few callers who's not got a problem.
No, I do.
Crumb.
Said you wanted to get that.
I know. I appreciate it, Terry. I'm sorry. My short-term memory's shot.
I wanted to make your day.
Thank you. You did. Thank you.
my wife's laptop is about to bite the dust, and so we're kind of thinking about what to get her next, and she's not listening, so I'm thinking about a Christmas present.
Yes.
She's not very sophisticated as a user, and she kind of tends to get in trouble a lot, so I'm thinking about a Chromebook.
Good.
And basically, she does the email and the browsing on the internet.
Perfect.
The only thing that she does that I have a question about is photo editing. She does just basically fairly basic photo editing.
So you can absolutely do that on a Chromebook. Google has its own Google Photos. When you use a Chromebook, it's really a Linux laptop with only one user interface, the Chrome browser. So anything you can do in the Chrome browser, you could do on a Chromebook, including and they kind of encourage you to use Google services. I'm sure that's why Google makes it. So if you, I don't know if she yet uses Google Photos, but if she does, that they've actually beefed up the photo editor in Google Photos. It's even better than it was before. So that will give her a lot of basic photo editing things like cropping, rotating, improving the color. They have filters on these now, sliders for light color and something they call pop, which enhances it. This is a very simple, basic editor. It doesn't have things like red eye removal. But for that, there's an excellent Google Chrome extension that takes it a lot farther. And Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, told us about this. It's called Polar with two R's. P-O-L-A-R-R. It's available. You could try it right now on Windows, Mac, Linux, and any Chrome browser. And Polar is a very complete, powerful photo editor that includes things like red eye reduction. In fact, it's probably more fancy than what she's using right now.
Awesome. She's using the old Picasso still.
Oh, this is very much like Picasso, only on steroids.
Awesome.
So if she's been using Picasa, she's probably used Picasa Web, the web version of that for storage. Google converted her to Google Photos some time ago. So she probably, with that, maybe not knowing it, but she uses any web access with Picasa. It's already photos. So,
and all
yeah.
the storage is in the cloud, correct?
And all the storage is in Google Photos, which is awesome.
Okay.
And the Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R, photo editor is fantastic.
Well, thinking about in the $300 to $500 range.
Oh, you're in great shape. There's lots of good choices. Acer makes a nice 14-inch. That's one thing you sacrifice, as I mentioned to our last caller. You sacrifice a little bit on screen size. Chromebooks, in order to keep the price down, tend not to be expensive. I would suggest for her a touch screen. Touch is marvelous. And now that you can put any Android app on a Chromebook, it becomes even more important. So if you get a Chromebook with touch screen, Dell makes an excellent Chromebook. Acer makes an excellent Chromebook. The Lenovo ThinkPad we were talking about, very nice. Acer has a bigger one, a 15-inch, if she needs a bigger screen. But it's not a great screen.
Awesome.
So I would, you know, the best one out there, it's a little pricier than the others, is the Dell 13-inch Chromebook. It's made like a real laptop. It's aluminum. Great screen, touch screen available. And it's in your price range. It starts at $429.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I think this is boy, that's a generous gift. And I think a really nice gift. And I love the euphemism. She gets into trouble on the computer. She won't get in any trouble on this. And what's nice is she'll be able to do her photo editors. You can now, if you have a computer, you can try Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R, and see if it does everything she wants. I think it will. I think it's actually better than Picasa. But remember, you have to kind of readjust what you think about a computer in order to use a Chromebook. But many of us have already done that when we use our smartphones, right? We had to rethink what a smartphone does. And so it's kind of like that. It's if you already kind of tried, you know, doing stuff on a smartphone, I think it's similar to that, especially since you can get the Android apps. Not all Chromebooks yet support Android apps. Some of the older Chromebooks never will. I think all the new Chromebooks will eventually. And one of the keys is having touch. Touch is very important going forward. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Jim is on the line from Southern Maryland. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Theo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate what you do for us.
Well, I appreciate your listening. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got all my movies backed up. I like
good.
To watch old movies.
Great.
I've got a little Blu-ray player. It's a Samsung, and I can play my Blu-ray data disc through it. I've got all my movies on a hard drive, and I watch movies with that. But I would like to be able to use an SD card.
Ah.
And I've got everything on a couple of SD cards, big ones.
Yeah.
And a second thing is, and it just won't play it, I've got a...
What are you sticking the SD card into?
Into a... a SanDisk reader.
And you're plugging that into what?
Into the Blu-ray player.
Yeah. So you'll have to look at the specs for that Blu-ray player. As I'm surprised it has a USB port. And it may not be to do the things you think it. It may just be to update the software, probably most likely is. If it can read media off of that, it'll have to be in a specific format. So you need to check the manual, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So do you know for a fact that the Blu-ray player will read movies off that USB port?
Yes, that's what I plug my Western Digital hard drive into.
Oh, and it does work.
And I also have got a couple movies on a USB or a thumb drive. That works.
Okay, so it's just this SD card it won't work.
Right.
Are the movies exactly the same format on the thumb drive and the hard drive as on the USB on the SD card?
Yes, everything's all the same.
Well, that's weird.
MP4. But I would be satisfied if I had something smaller that I could take with me when I travel instead of that Blu-ray player.
Oh, there are lots of media devices that you could put an SD card in.
Can I get a suggestion?
Yeah, SanDisk. Let me just look it up. Makes a media player that you put in SD memory, and it does it via Wi-Fi. So,
yeah, I don't mind plugging into a hotel's, smart TV. They all have, connections, but.
Well, look at the. It's called the SanDisk Connect.
SanDisk Connect.
Yep. And it's basically now it's designed to play off like a Wi-Fi off on a phone or a tablet, right? Streams to up to 5 smartphones and tablets, but that means you probably could. It depends on the TV. You probably could stream to that. So this isn't this doesn't plug in via a cable. It's wireless. And it has a battery. It goes for 10 hours. The idea is you could bring this in the car. And the kids could watch on their tablet the movies on this drive.
So could I watch movies off the iPhone or the iPod Touch?
Yeah.
Ah.
That's exactly what this is for.
Ah, okay.
And it's not expensive. SanDisk makes the, the memory cards. So I think it's just a way to sell more memory cards for them. It's called the SanDisk Connect. I've had one for a long time, and it's quite cool. I'm sure there are many ways to do this, but that will work absolutely with any portable device.
Very nice. Thank you very much. The computer that you were talking about, the real safe computer that is real cheap. I can't think of the name.
The Chromebook.
The Chromebook. I'm a Mac person. I love iPhones. I use MacBook, but I hate iTunes.
As far as I know, every Apple user does, except Tim Cook.
If I got a Chromebook, could I manipulate songs?
Sure. So there are a couple ways to do this. The way I do it is not free, but it works pretty well, is to subscribe to Google Play Music. That's $10 a month. That's like Apple Music. It gives you all the streaming songs. They have 30 million streaming songs. But it also allows you to upload all your Apple Music to the Google Cloud and then stream it from there.
Well, what I'm interested in is I like to cut off the first part or sometimes the last part of a song because, either I just don't like what they did or...
So you want to edit the song, have your own personal version. Well, that's what the Google Cloud does. It lets you store your own personal versions of the music, but it's $10 a month. The problem with most Chromebooks is they don't have a lot of storage, typically 16 gigabytes. So I don't know how much music you have.
Well, once I played with the song, I would move it back over to the Mac, so that I can, put it on my phone. And
you certainly can play music. You certainly can play music on a Chromebook. Most Chromebooks have SD card readers as well. You could put music on there. So you could certainly do that. But the nice thing about Google Music is all your see, the Chromebooks are designed for all your data really to be in the cloud. They don't have a lot of storage. Hey, I got to run. But that's the answer for that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. On we go with the show. To Los Angeles, Dan's on the line. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, I had a question. I'm not sure if you're familiar with XBMC or the Kodi Media Center.
I sure am. Yes, sir.
Okay. What do you think your opinion on the third-party add-ons is? Because, since you're streaming it, it's technically... not downloading, so it seems like it might be a gray area legally, but...
Oh, well, it depends what the add-on does. For instance, there's a third-party add-on for Kodi that plays back my podcasts or my live streaming. That would be perfectly legal because I want you to watch the show.
Yeah.
However, if it's streaming movies from Sony Pictures Entertainment and no cost to you, that might be another story entirely. So there are piracy. There absolutely are piracy tools that you can use on these media players, and they're illegal. Now, would you get caught? I don't know.
Yeah, because it seems similar to just streaming something on YouTube.
Yeah, but it depends. And by the way, there is a YouTube plugin that's legal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the streaming that would be the problem. It's what the content is. I presume that you're talking about streaming copyrighted content.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't let you off the hook that you're streaming it.
Yeah. Okay. Because it just seems like the Digital Millennia Copyright Act, it specifies that you're actually like distributing it. Or
Your Honor, according to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, Section 6, Article 33, yeah. I'm just distributing this digitally.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to jail, my friend. I don't want to hear. I do not want to hear anything about your legal.
No, it doesn't let you off the hook. You're streaming copyrighted content, that's piracy.
That's illegal. Yeah.
Technically, untechnically, and every which way but loose. Now, to be honest, are you going to get arrested and go to jail for that? Probably not. However, in the past, companies have been taken pretty poorly to that. Lately, what they do is they contact your ISP. And your internet service provider says, it has come to our attention that you are illegally streaming Five Nights at Freddy's or whatever it is you're streaming, and knock it off. And then there's this escalating series of penalties. I don't think in the last few years any individual has either gone to jail or had to pay a fine for piracy. I think they go after the big piracy outfits as opposed to individuals.
Yeah, it seems like the people that are hosting the content for it are probably the ones.
But that doesn't let you off the hook. I mean, you're participating in an illegal act, but it seems to be that the record company's got a pretty big black eye from going after people like Jammie Thomas, who was a single mom who ended up owing them $500,000 because she'd streamed 12 songs. That was such a bad publicity, PR mark for the record companies that everybody's kind of said, we probably shouldn't go after our users. Let's go after the companies instead. However, not illegal for them to do it. And really, your ISP is the front line of defense now. In the United States, they've crafted a thing called the seven strikes rule. There's this escalating seven levels of warning. First one's just a letter, then there's a letter, then they start to slow you down. Eventually, they can boot you off.
Yeah, that's the same thing like torrents, I guess, if you're using
It's the same as torrents, yeah. And remember, Pirate Bay said, hey, we don't host any illegal content. There's no illegal content on Pirate Bay. It's just a bunch of links.
Yeah.
Didn't get them off the hook. They did jail time.
Because I've been using Kodi for years, and they've never contacted me in my ISP, but it just seems like it's becoming a little more popular, and it's like cable companies are going to start doing something.
Well, so for instance, in the case of BitTorrent, you can see who's getting the content. So they can send, what they do is they'll send a John Doe notice. What they get is an IP address. They'll get your IP address. And they can tell from the IP address, he's a Cox customer or a Time Warner customer, whatever. They'll know who your ISP is. So they'll send a note to the ISP saying, Saturday afternoon at 1:38 p.m., the customer at 168.15.32.27 was streaming my weekend at Bernie's. Could you send him a note? And the ISP won't give up your name, generally. They won't say, that was Dan. They'll send Dan a letter saying, hey, Dan, don't do it. And like I said, they'll escalate through it. That's mostly what happens. But again, whether you get caught or not is secondary to the principle, the ethical principle. You are stealing that movie, basically. The problem, what's happened is technology has so far outpaced these companies' ability to stop you. It's very frustrating for them, and that's why, don't copy that floppy. Remember those ads? And now you go to a movie and...
You wouldn't steal a pizza pie, would you? Well, why are you stealing this movie?
I didn't steal this movie. I paid $15.95 to see this movie.
Yeah, but when you go home, you're going to steal.
No, I'm not. It annoys them, and it's against the law. So don't do it. That'd be my advice. Here's the truth of the matter. I have a little less sympathy for the content companies because they're doing the math. Well, this must be how much we're losing. Remember the record companies say, we're losing billions of dollars. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. It's very hard to figure out how, would you watch that? Would you pay for that movie if you couldn't get it for free? Maybe not. So you can't really tell how much they're losing. One thing we do know, the record industry's cratered. You know, but that I think that's as much because of Spotify as because of piracy. And we also know people are paying more for content than ever before. What's your cable bill? I bet in many cases it's over $100 a month. We pay a lot for content now. And I think that how much did Star Wars The Force Awakens make? I just mentioned that earlier. $2 billion last Christmas. And Rogue One is set to probably make something similar. So we go to the movies still. We buy movies at home. We're paying a lot for content. I would guess the American budget's higher for content than ever before, than ever in history. So maybe there's even more out there. If you darn people wouldn't steal, but maybe not. Maybe not. Nevertheless, the law and ethics and, you know, just being a nice person say you probably should pay for that. Don't copy that floppy. Pay for it. Don in Montana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Don.
Hi, Leo. I've got a question about backups. I'm confused with Windows 10 now. There's a file history, which I thought was an adequate backup, but they told me that's not a backup.
Well, it's not if your hard drive dies, because that's where the file history is.
So what do you need? You need backup disk image? Or
there's a couple of things I would do. I love disk imaging. That's like make a copy of the whole thing. But you don't want to do it all the time. That's too much to just for a backup. So what you would do is when you first set up a machine and you get it just the way you like it, make an image of that. And then make a backup, and you should have an external drive, and there's backup programs. And then what it does is what's called an incremental backup. It backs up changes since the last time you backed up a full backup. And then the third part, and of course our sponsor Carbonite talks about this, but it's absolutely true. You should have one version of your backup offsite in case there's a fire or something really disastrous. Take it to work, upload it to the cloud, whatever, but one, so three copies, one of them should be off-site. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's the 30-second explanation of how to back up. Oh, file history requires you use a separate drive. All right. Yeah, file history is great. I mean, because that's basically versioning, and that's useful. I did not know it required a second drive. That's interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. If you're tuning in for the Giz Whiz, Dick DiBartolo will join us next week. So we'll do a Giz Whiz next week, next show. I'm sorry. We'll do a Giz Whiz tomorrow on most of these same tech guy stations. But that's good news because it means I can take more calls like Pete in Florida. Hi, Pete.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. You're talking to a technically challenged person.
Okay.
Well, I'm 76 going on 39. That's neither here nor there.
I'm a similar age.
Oh, okay.
60 going on 39. Same thing.
Okay, sounds good, man. Hey, this is a real super quick question for you. I have a smartphone, an Android, LG, and this morning the screen went white. I was checking my email, all of a sudden it just went white.
Oy.
And I went, yeah, I couldn't figure what the hell's going on, you know. So I tried everything, couldn't get it to work, turn it off, turn it on. Anyway, long story short, I took the back off of the phone.
Yeah.
I checked the SIM card. That looked pretty good. I didn't really know what I was looking at. But anyway, I took the battery out. Somebody told me to take the battery out and wait a minute, put it back in and see if it works. And I did, and it did. Do you know why?
Yeah, because that's a full reset. It's funny that turning it off and on did not work. Did you turn it all the way off, like you pressed and hold and powered down? Because, you know, this
I
is
think I,
yeah,
think I did, but
this is a
sure.
Common source of confusion because we have a phone that has a screen that's on, and when you press this button, the screen goes off. And that, on many devices, would mean you turn it off. And you're not. You haven't. You just turn off the screen. So it just turns off the screen. So in order, so if you pressed and held the phone and said power off or restart, and the screen was still white, then I'm not sure. Pulling the battery really does a serious restart. Like, you got no juice. Everything goes. So
yeah,
that's it. And it's been normal since?
Yeah, it's fine. I'm talking to you on it.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, these things happen.
Okay, I
don't know what to say. These things happen.
I'll say, and listen, I appreciate it. I know you got other guests, so I'll let you go.
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoy your show very much.
Thanks, Pete. Bye-bye. Keep listening. Yeah. I don't, you know, who knows? Computers are great mysteries, and your phone is a computer. All sorts of things could have happened. I don't have any theory. I've not seen that before. But if taking the battery, that was actually very smart of you. And this is one of the reasons I hate the modern phones where you have the only phone currently sold today that you could take the battery out, the LG G5. Julian in Texas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, how are you?
I'm listening to you on the phone. It's great. Last week I was listening to you, and you said you could recover some data loss. I've had a computer go down, a couple, but this is the latest one. You said recover.com, so I went to...
No, not recover.com. It's from...
Okay, I understand it. I went to ER. I didn't know until the day it's VA. But the last time I did it at ER, they went through it for 2 hours, and then all of a sudden... They wanted to charge me $90.
And that's why I don't send you there.
Okay. I went to Recover, but the problem is Recover files only work on Windows computers. I've got a Mac.
Oh, well, there you go. You know, if that's...
Of the day.
That's pretty...
Charles on the internet has asked the same question.
That's pretty funny, then, that Recover.com said, oh, for $90, we'll get your stuff back. Because you know what? They couldn't. They thought you were on a Windows machine. So that was a scam then, I would guess. So
I understand that.
There are Mac file tools that are similar. There are a couple of companies that make these. I'm not sure which one I would recommend because I haven't used an Unerase on a Macintosh in a while. Recover is my favorite for Windows. Let me just look real quickly. There used to be a program. Let's see. Unerase Macintosh.
I formatted the disk and I got it back up, but I can only go to. I only have a disk for 10.6.8. I can't get up any higher than.
You know, that's nothing to worry about. You know, I didn't know this. This is actually. I'm glad I Googled this because the company we've recommended for Windows utilities. Makes a Mac utility that does this. Ease, E-A-S-E-U-S. Ease U-S. They have a free Mac undeleting program. So
okay.
EaseUS.com. And then I was going to suggest, you know, the old time recovery solutions like Tech Tool Pro and stuff. But, hey, if this one's free and it's a good company, Ease U-S, then that's probably the one I'd recommend. For some reason, I don't know why... Macintosh's file system is very similar to Windows. The recovery process is very similar. But for some reason, while there's a proliferation of Windows tools to do this, there aren't a whole lot on the Mac side. And I'm not sure why that is. There's Sub Rosa Soft's File Salvage. There's ProSoft Data Rescue. But if EaseUS makes one, that's probably the one I'd go with.
I appreciate it, Leo.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Kathy's in Orange County. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
I have a question regarding our Dish DDR.
Okay.
My husband's got a Direct now. We've got that hooked up this week. And we still have the subscription service with Dish.
The old Hopper.
Oh.
No. Go ahead.
No.
That's what they call it, the Hopper. But anyway, go ahead.
And we have... Yeah.
But you moved to Direct TV.
Right.
And I'm guessing you're wondering, what do I do with all that stuff recorded on my Dish DVR?
Right, because I have a couple things that I really want. Like, my daughter was in the Rose Parade. There's a couple of news broadcasts. Members were in them. Is there any way to save that?
You know, almost all of these companies, and I'm going to ask the chat room to help me out on this because I'm not completely familiar with the format Dish uses, but almost all these companies use encryption to prevent you from pirating. But what that also means is stuff you've recorded on a Dish drive is on that Dish drive and can never be moved off. Let me just see. Yeah, I think it is. I don't see any solutions for that. I don't see if with TiVo you can do it, but I think Dish. The Dish Hopper, I think it's encrypted, and the only way is to use what we call the analog hole, which is to hook up a recorder to your DVR, like a TV would be, a DVD recorder, and play it back and record it.
Oh, okay.
That's the only way you can do it, I'm sorry to say. Because they won't let you. You have a nice digital copy on that hard drive, but they won't let you get it off. Hey, thanks to Mike Cozio, our musical director. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, our phone answerer. Thanks to you for being here. We're out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.